I'm going on a diet. From this day forward, I pledge there will be no pork chop too succulent, no donut too tasty, no pizza too laden with delicious toppings to prevent me from reaching my scientifically determined ideal weight. As God is my witness, I'll always be hungry again. Don't shut up.
Homer Simpson starting us off today. Did you start 2018 determined to shed 20 pounds or get more exercise, eat a more balanced diet, give up smoking, be a healthier person? New Year's resolutions started with the best intentions often end in failure. You gain back the weight you lost. You let that gym membership lapse. You can't resist those sugary snacks at night. Well, you're not alone. It's not easy to change our habits, even with the best intentions and all the willpower in the world. But there are things you can do to be a healthier person, to turn those behaviors we know are not good for us into ones that are. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Nyrene Dardarian. She's assistant clinical professor and director of the Center for Nutrition Performance at Drexel University, working with the Flyers, the Union, U.S. Squash. Nyrene Dardarian, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
Also with us is J.L. Lewis, and she's a personal trainer, fitness consultant, nutritionist, has worked with the U.S. Air Force, a blogger, and a contributor to Huffington Post. And J.L., nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well. Are you two New Year's resolutions people, Nyrene?
No, I'm not. I am not. I should have had something prepared, but the truth is I have no New Year's resolution. Just live life. Have fun.
How about for you, JL?
I'm pretty much the same mindset. You know, I think if you're starting off and you have resolutions, that's great. Go for it. But I try not to do it around any specific time.
Just live a healthier life. It's bitter cold today in Philadelphia and in other places as well. And I wonder whether there isn't something about winter, I'll put this to you, JL, where we just have this urge, if not to hibernate, to stay indoors, to be less active.
Of course. Well, I mean, the sun sets around 4:30. It is frigid, and no one wants to be out and about. So a lot of people have a tendency to stay home. It's much easier to stay home. It's much easier to hibernate, stay in, and not be as active. So that's a huge limiting factor when it comes to exercise and actually sticking to a routine.
And it's hard to would be hard to get outside.
And the whole motivation thing, you know, it's hard to motivate yourself, and it's hard to find motivation within others to get out there and be more involved.
Let me ask you, Nyrene, and as we know, most diets, broadly speaking, don't work in that people, yes, they'll lose weight in the beginning, and then over time, something happens, maybe they go back to their old habits and the weight creeps back on. How should we think about just plain old eating?
I think we should approach it as plain old eating. It is something that we have to deal with every single day. So the word diet, I don't like to use it because that indicates that it's short term. We're doing this for a certain period of time, and then we can do anything we want afterwards. But I don't like to approach it thinking every day I need to follow these structured rules a little bit more loosely and making it part of your life. It's every day you think about food. You have to. You have no option. Everybody thinks about food every day. So it's not eliminating the thought of it. It's just recreating how you're going to approach it.
So banish the word diet.
Get rid of the word diet.
And substitute what?
Lifestyle. I think lifestyle is the word that you use. It's not a diet. It's the way that you live your life through food because food is complicated. It not only provides nourishment. Yeah, we could approach it from that angle. Well, you need this much every single day. But it also provides happiness and culture and
sociability.
Exactly. So there are a lot of things that are involved in the world of nutrition.
How do you see food, JL?
Honestly, almost the exact same way. So I think oftentimes it's looked at as a negative thing. And we put a lot of pressure on the food that we eat and when we eat and how we eat. But it is something that, one, we need to live. We need to survive. But also something that should be fun and enjoyed and really, you know, just accepted. So not something that we have all of these restrictions on, but something that we can look forward to that's of nourishment and not something that, you know, we're taking away from, but something that we're adding in to really better ourselves.
And what if that nourishment is potato chips, something, ice cream?
You know, that's okay. You know, as long as that's not your main, you know, source of nourishment, and that's not what you're eating on a daily basis and, you know, like all of the time, I think that's fine. You know, if your body can handle that and you know your body well enough to know, okay, I can have a little bit of ice cream, I can have some chips. I mean, that's what life is about. That's what a lifestyle approach is about. You know, so no extremes.
No extremes.
No, no extremes. Really, you can go extreme on both end, on the end of unhealthy extremes and over healthy extremes, which are really not healthy always. So no extremes, kind of take it all by. And I know that you'll often hear dietitians always saying moderation, moderation, right, moderation. Right. And I don't want to just send that message because it does have to be planned. This takes planning. You know, you don't just wake up every morning and say, let me just run to this store and eat this. And then there's planning needs to be involved. You plan many other things in your life. You plan when you're going to exercise, right, mm-hmm. Janelle? You plan out what you're going to do with your schedule, when your meetings are. Food has to be planned if it's going to be part of your lifestyle.
So when you wake up in the morning, and I saw a video where you said eat breakfast, that's important. I will confess, I don't eat breakfast except on the weekends, but nonetheless, eat breakfast, but don't just be impulsive then.
Don't be impulsive. That's a really good word to use there. It should be thought out. Have things planned. And I think that is kind of a trend that I see now with people preparing meals for the week and boxing them in special portion sizes, and that's a good thing if you can keep up with it. I think there are different levels of planning. That's a lot of planning, but there's somewhere in the middle that's a more moderate level of planning, just thinking, I have a meeting at 12 and mm-hmm. it's at a restaurant, so maybe my breakfast will be a little bit smaller and so will my dinner, so I can accommodate what I'm going to have at the meeting.
That's Nyree Dardarian, and she's director of the Center for Nutrition and Performance at Drexel University. JL Lewis is with us as well. She's a personal trainer, fitness consultant, talking to us about how to get healthy, stay healthy, be fit, eat right. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Jill, let me ask you, I know you work with people directly on fitness and personal training, but I'm thinking of the more sort of average person.
Sure.
About how active they should be. I mean, activity, broadly speaking.
Sure. So for general population, I think it's one of those things, you know, where you need to get to know your body. So you need to know your physical limitations. But ideally, you want to be working out, in my mind, every single day. But that doesn't mean hitting it hard in the gym. That doesn't mean, you know, doing like this high impact class. But just having that mindset of, I'm going to go for a walk. You know, so
that's enough, at least to get started.
If you're doing something every day, you know, to do a walk, I think oftentimes people, you know, they get really ballsy, you know, and they make these resolutions or they want to enforce these changes, and they're just way too drastic. And it's something that's not, that they can't balance throughout their lifestyle. So, you know, just thinking not necessarily of exercise, but as getting out and doing something, being physical, being active. So if you want to take your dog for, you know, a 35-45 minute walk, that can be a form of exercise mm-hmm. for some. And just sticking with that on a regular basis. So, you know, kind of shifting the mindset of having to work out as a punishment, or, you know, this is something that I have to do versus something that I enjoy doing.
What about things as simple as taking the steps instead of the escalator? You know, I've read that time and time again.
Of course. And, you know, people, as cliche as it sounds, it does add up over time. So when it's not snowy and icy, sure, park your car a little bit further, you know, and then walk right. And then take the steps. Things like that really do add up over time.
You want to add to that, Nyree?
Oh, I agree. I agree 100% with that. I think that it's not about a lump sum of physical activity pushed into 35 minutes of hard sweat, and it just builds angst sometimes getting to do that. How am I going to fit that in? Then I have to take a shower.
Right.
So you're thinking about so many things. So, you know, if you can just stay active, you know, what people keep those Fitbits, they make a difference. They push you to walk further, take more stairs, lift more things, and unless you're a young child and has learned to put the Fitbit on the dog, then that doesn't really help with the results. But I have heard of that happening.
That is cheating.
That's cheating.
We were talking about cheating.
If you just kind of, you know, do your thing, count your steps, raise your goal, it feels good.
What's interesting, we had a listener asking, are Fitbits effective? JL, how do you see them?
I do. So I see them both ways. I definitely think that they're effective. They can actually, you know, help you with your overall progress when it comes to fitness. But sometimes people get obsessed with them. So, you know, that's one thing that you have to be mindful of. You have to know who you are as a person and individual. If you have an obsessive, you know, trait or personality, just be careful with it because you don't want to take it to an extreme. But yes, for the, again, general population, the everyday person, throw on a Fitbit. It almost encourages you and pushes you and gives you a goal, a daily goal to hit X amount of steps, to get in, you know, X amount of stairs. It's kind of like a buddy. It's a buddy system.
And an extreme person would be saying, oh, well, I'm not going to do 10,000. I'm going to do 20,000
right.
steps.
Right. Or, you know, I can't meet you guys for dinner. I have to get my steps and I have to do it. And I've seen people like that. And it is something that you have to be very aware of. But yeah, they help. They definitely
help.
But
think of it as your friend.
Exactly.
Not your enemy.
Think of it as your fitness pal.
We had an email from Jill. There is no magic. Eat less, move more, get off the couch. Nairi, is it that simple? I mean, in certain ways, there is no magic. But go ahead.
Yeah. So let me put this into two different categories. For weight loss, it is that simple. If you want to lose weight, then you eat less, you move more, sure. But then if you want to add in, I want to live a long, healthy life, then you start analyzing the nutrients that you're getting and making sure that you get a variety of fruits and vegetables and fiber and lean meats. Yeah, so it does take it a step further. So you can just look at one category. I want to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Eat less. Can you eat a Snickers bar every day and lose weight? You absolutely can. Will you be healthy? You will not. So there's planning involved still again. How many fruits and vegetables am I getting in a day? Because these things matter. They provide different sorts of nutrients, and you want to get all of your nutrients to be as healthy as you can.
You mentioned a Snickers bar, meaning that there are so many calories in a Snickers bar. So if you ate one and then an apple, then you could lose weight in a day?
Adding up the calories? Theoretically, if you're counting
not
calories, I am not suggesting this at all, but if you want to go with a very basic model, yes, that will work. I look at these cleanses. Cleanses are just very, very low-calorie diets, extremely low-calorie diets.
So how low?
About 600 to 800 calories a day. So the minimum recommended calories per day in order to be able to achieve the nutrients that you need is 1,200. So once you dip below that, do you experience weight loss? Absolutely. I do not think that you can maintain that weight loss.
It's hard to live on 600
calories. It's hard to live on it.
Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Nairi Dardarian. She's director of the Center for Nutrition and Performance at Drexel University. J.L. Lewis is a personal trainer, fitness consultant, a blogger, a contributor to the Huffington Post. We want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with J.L. Lewis and also Nairi Dardarian about how to stay healthy, not just over the next couple of months, but into the rest of the year and beyond. And again, you can join us. Any questions or comments or stories to tell, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Well, let's talk on the air what we were just talking about off the air. JL, we were talking about the importance of just plain old sleep.
Sleep. So it's not just the importance of sleep, it's also the importance of quality sleep. And I think in this day and age, we are all guilty of having our cell phones by our bed. So I am guilty as charged. I sleep with my phone right next to me. I don't even have an alarm clock. So it is my alarm clock. I check it throughout the night to make sure clients aren't texting me or anything like that. But it really does mess with your sleep patterns and your REM cycle. And I'm sure, you know, we can all relate. If you've had a good night's sleep, quality sleep, you wake up and you feel like a completely different human.
Yeah.
So
And does it affect things like weight? I'm just curious about that, Nyreem. Yeah,
it does. There's a lot. There's research now that is looking at how the circadian rhythms will impact hormones. And so these hormones can lead to obesity, but also just overeating or eating patterns or the tendency to feel more hungry or not feel hungry. So, yeah, it plays a role there. So getting a good night's sleep and doing it the right way, you know, putting the phone down, stopping screen time. And maybe you can't stop screen time. Maybe it's part of your routine for bedtime. Then you can implement other things to help reduce some of the light that is really what is affecting the sleep patterns. So there are special glasses you can wear. You can do things to kind of help if you can't put down the phone.
You can actually even lower just the brightness on the phone.
You can also lower the brightness on the phone. Yeah. I did a little bit of reading on that, actually, to see. There's also apps that you can purchase that will change the screen mode. So there are things that you can do if you can't put down the phone. But getting a good night's sleep, sometimes people say, oh, I have 2 glasses of wine. But that is also not effective for sleep. That interrupts sleep patterns. And so when you're waking up in the middle of the night, you're disrupting your sleep pattern.
So eat right, get a good night's sleep. I mean, these are things, JL, that we know we should do, and yet somehow it seems hard to do.
That we know we should do that seems so simple that we just take for granted. So, you know, something as easy as getting to bed earlier, as, you know, eating well and exercising, just being active. So my approach is that no matter what, you have to be strong and you have to be healthy from the inside out. So if you look a certain way, that does not mean that you are healthy.
Well, that's interesting because I think for a lot of health, losing weight, diet things, it's how we look to the outside world versus how we might feel inside.
Exactly. It's a lot of it is aesthetics and how, you know, people want to portray themselves and their body and all of that stuff. But overall, it's, you know, it all has to start from within.
All right. Let me get, looks like Jack calling us from Philadelphia. And Jack, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Hello. I was wondering if it's possible to get all your daily nutritional requirements just from eating raw fruits and vegetables.
Raw fruits and vegetables. Can you, let me put that to you, Nyree. Can you get all your nutritional, all your nutrition from fruits and vegetables?
You cannot.
You cannot?
You cannot get it just from fruits and vegetables. You can get a good plenty amount of them, but just from raw fruits and vegetables, you need to augment it with sources that are going to give you calcium, vitamin D, proteins, amino acids. So you're not going to get all of this just from fruits and vegetables.
Do you want to add to that, JL?
I would agree. I think, you know, knowing your body and a well-balanced diet and figuring out what's missing and what you need to add in and how to add that in is key, a key component when it comes to nutrition.
Jack, thanks for calling into Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. Let me read a tweet from Bruce. Tips against nighttime binging, please. I'm a fitness professional. I personally have wrestled with this for many years as energy wanes each day. You're nodding your head there, JL.
So from one fitness professional to another, I feel your pain. I don't know what your schedule is like, but oftentimes we are so busy throughout the day that we just aren't eating enough throughout the day. So when it finally comes time for us to come home, sit down and have a meal, we will eat anything and everything in sight, and we cannot stop because our body needs those nutrients, it needs the calories, and we're craving it. So ideally, if you can add in things throughout the day that are grab-and-go snacks, just to, you know, keep your everything kind of balanced throughout the day, it'll really help you at night. And I'm with you.
Nyree, for snacks, how should we think about snacks, healthy snacks?
I think snacks are a good part to something good to incorporate daily. But again, these have to be planned out. So a snack doesn't mean a binge with a box of Wheat Thins and just putting your hand in it and eating it. It's not. You need to know what the portion sizes are, and they need to be built into the day to help you perform at your best. So if you know between 2 and 4 o'clock there's a slump in your day and you're not feeling well, you feel tired at that time, incorporate a snack and add some fluid there too, because fluid is really important at that time. That might be a key of like a little signal sending you. It might be interpreted as hunger, but it's really some thirst. And get a cup of water or have a cup of tea. Have an apple, because then it will have some nutrients in it as well as fluid. So it kind of is a little package of both. So incorporating snacks, it's smart, but again, not mindless snacking.
Exactly.
Where you just, without thinking about it, you're just dipping your hand into the bag, right?
Never take the bag.
Don't take the bag?
Don't take the bag. There's no reason to ever take the bag. You know, I talk to people a lot about this, and so the option is, do you buy prepackaged snacks that are in a already, you know, portion size? Yes. I know it's more expensive, but unless you have the time to pre-portion it, then do it. Go ahead, pre-portion your own snacks, but otherwise, spend the extra bit because you're spending it on yourself. You know, you're investing only in yourself if you buy the pre-portioned bags and then you eat one.
Let me read some more comments. How do you stay motivated while having a busy schedule? Examples: is it okay to be a weekend warrior and do one or two nights, two light exercises during the week? I'm putting that to you, JL, in terms of that kind of activity schedule.
So I think the major component is accountability. So holding yourself accountable, same way you book meetings in your schedule, the same way that you have you schedule a doctor's appointment, schedule in an exercise. Because at the end of the day, you have to be healthy. You have to be, you know, moving and grooving throughout the day and throughout the week. If you have extra time on the weekends, great. Do a little bit more or, you know, add in a little bit more time and subtract some time from the week. But really make sure that you are consistent. That's really the major, you know, key and component is to be consistent throughout the week. So then on the weekend, it doesn't feel like, you know, this extra job, this something that I have to do versus something that I enjoy doing throughout the week. You're deserving of that time, 30 minutes. Give it to yourself.
Do we stretch enough before we get active?
No, we don't. As a general population, no, we don't. That's another thing that I think we take for granted, and it's so quote-unquote easy to do that we don't do it. That's really, again, the whole component of health and making yourself better. So you need to do some active stretches before you exercise so that you don't injure yourself and that you're not on the couch binge eating and then you're not exercising
and there
for
it
weeks
goes,
to come.
Right?
Yep, it's a cyclic cycle.
A tweet from Hugh. It's not about eating less, but less often. I went from 210 pounds 3 years ago and an over 38-inch waist to a size small lounge pants by doing intermittent fasting and prolonged fasting and a keto diet. Many people can fast for a month or more and be healthy. Do you, Nairi, have a position on fasting? So generally, broadly speaking.
Broadly speaking, well, I want to congratulate on losing the weight. I think that's fantastic. It's not easy to lose that much weight. I am not a fan of long-term fasts. There is some information about short-term intermittent fasting and some benefits that can be gained from it, like increased testosterone. Does that mean that everybody should be doing it? No, it really should be supervised. It is not something that everybody should just implement into their daily week without speaking with a dietitian, a physician, somebody who is overseeing this. It's not healthy. And prolonged fasting is not healthy.
Just because you're just not putting enough fuel into the engine?
You're just not. And it's about the nutrients. You do need nutrients from all different food categories to achieve optimal health. We're reading so much about the benefits of fiber, the benefits of if you read anything, it's what helps the mind? Oh, fruits and vegetables and fiber. What helps the body? Oh, fruits, vegetables, and fiber. And then you jump on a ketogenic diet and you eliminate fruits, vegetables, and fiber. It really doesn't make sense.
Let me get Dan from Pennsylvania to join us, and JL, I'll give you a chance to respond to his question. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was just wondering, from the last caller's comments, how if someone can't afford or is unable to seek a nutritionist out, how do you find out what you're deficient in, or where do you go to figure out what you're lacking?
So a great starting point would be your doctor, so your primary care physician. So if you get, you know, a blood panel once a year, you can kind of gauge what nutrients you're deficient in and start from there. And oftentimes, your primary care physician can refer you to a nutritionist. And luckily, a lot of nutritionists, first couple of visits are covered by insurance, health insurance, which a lot of people are not aware of, but it's a really awesome feature to have and to actually use.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And that gives you the sort of basic information about
exactly.
your own
health. Exactly. And everyone's different, so it's really hard to kind of pinpoint what you're missing or what you're lacking. And, you do kind of have to take your body and figure out what it is that you need, because everyone is completely different.
Anything you want to add to that, Nairi?
I like what you said about everybody is different, and you really just can't do a blood panel to see all of the nutrients. It's almost better to work backwards. Why don't you do an inventory of what you do consume every day and then see where the deficiencies could be? It might not be an overt deficiency, so it could be a minor deficiency that you can just add some food back in to your diet to kind of equalize.
Let me read another email, one from Stephanie. Speaking of nutrition, not just losing weight, what about overweight people who live long, healthy lives? Also, what about fruits and veggies that contain pesticides or preservatives? And I think, JL, I mean, we all know people that seem to break the odds and live long, what appears to be healthy lives, and
right.
are not, are overweight, maybe
right.
even obese.
So we were talking about this a little bit. A lot of people strive for the aesthetic component when it comes to health, but what we need to really think of overall is working from the inside out. So if you are healthy on the inside, your body might not necessarily look to, what society says should look and appear healthy. So if you are, rocking your nutrition and working out and you are happy and healthy, it doesn't mean you have to look a certain way or like a supermodel or anything like that. So if that's, everyone has a different definition of what health means to them.
And that's sometimes the hardest part, right?
Yeah.
Because we're so critical, and you see these,
exactly.
perfect specimens.
Exactly. And I think, that's something that we really need to get away from, is just how we look on the outside. Because someone that looks ideal on the outside, has the perfect body, to someone else could be very sick on the inside.
Again, do you want to add to that, Nairi?
I'm going to agree with JL here as well. I think that what I would like to keep focusing on is good nutrition, healthy nutrition for a very healthy life. And I think when we say these words, people are envisioning this supermodel, but that's not what I'm envisioning. I'm envisioning the average person who might be overweight, but is very healthy and is leading this healthy lifestyle, which is more important. To achieve something that less than 5% of the population right. looks like, that's really unachievable. That's not the goal. The goal is for you to be healthy and feel good and to approach each day with a positive outlook on food and exercise.
Really this melding of mental health and physical health.
Yeah.
Let me read some more comments. An email from Bonnie regarding the earlier advice to always eat breakfast. Why would anyone eat breakfast when there is no hunger? If you're not hungry.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, why would you eat breakfast?
That is a good question. And if so, this is difficult to answer because there are different categories here as well. So if it was a child and they said that they're not hungry before they're going to school in the morning, and you know that they're not going to be able to eat until a designated time that's for lunch, I really encourage breakfast. There's enough research there that proves that eating breakfast does stimulate the brain and does engage learning. Now, if you wake up and you're not hungry and you know your body, you don't have to eat breakfast, but you might have access to food at 10 o'clock or later. So if you can space your breakfast doesn't mean 8 a.m. Breakfast doesn't even mean 12 noon. Breakfast, if you're doing night shifts, for example, might mean 3 in the afternoon. So you need to know what that rule of thumb is. It's more about spacing out your meals and keeping with a pattern.
An email from Warren. Hi, what about cutting back on alcohol to help with weight loss? I'm looking at you, JL, but, people often have a drink or two every
right.
day or several times a week.
Right. And I think that's one of those things kind of that Nairi was saying as well. It does mess with certain things. So it gives you kind of this false sense of either a fullness or that, this is going to help put me to sleep sort of thing. So definitely it's overall, it's healthier to cut back on alcohol. I don't know how much alcohol you are consuming.
Right.
But overall, as a general rule of thumb, I would say try not to really drink throughout the week. You know, it keeps
save
you
it for the weekend.
Save it for the weekend. But that doesn't mean save all of it for the weekend or binge drink on the weekend. But if you're having those two glasses of wine, sure, have it on a Friday with a great meal where you know that you don't have to wake up at a certain time. But really cutting back on your alcohol is great for fitness. It'll help you sleep better. Overall, it'll help you kind of keep your weight at bay. And, you know, then you don't have that craving every single day.
I was reading about high intensity activities like jumping rope and things that you might do for what, 10 minutes?
Sure.
Is that a helpful thing to do?
It is. It's something, so it's usually referred to as HIIT, high intensity interval training. And so you do like a movement for an extended period of time, and it's, you get your heart rate up, and then you take a break. So, and then you go back to it. So for a lot of people, it's really effective. It kind of makes your workout a little bit shorter and gets your heart rate up, and then it allows your heart rate to come back down. So it is a great form of training, or something that can also be incorporated into your normal routine.
And the message I also get, we got about a minute before we have to say goodbye, which is do what you enjoy.
Yes.
I mean, don't do what you don't enjoy, but you got to find that thing.
You do have to find that thing. You need to enjoy food. You do. It's part of your social being. So if it's a bite, you know, the first bite of something tastes so good, but bite number 10 might not. So maybe know to stop at 2 or 3 when it still tastes good. So you need to have the foods that you like. You need to incorporate them daily, and then you need to look at the full pattern.
You want to add to that at
all? I would completely agree with Nairi. Same thing for fitness. I know that it's not always fun, and you do want to push yourself and challenge yourself, but it shouldn't feel like a chore. It should feel like something that you are interested in doing, something that you enjoy doing, and after the fact, you're like, wow, my body feels great. Mm-hmm. I feel like a rock star.
Something to look forward
exactly.
to, right?
Yep.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you both for coming in and joining
us
today
much.
On Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Nairi Dardarian is an assistant clinical professor, also director of the Center for Nutrition and Performance at Drexel University. J.L. Lewis is a personal trainer, fitness consultant, and nutritionist, a blogger. She also contributes to the Huffington Post. Well, we've been talking about what to do to stay fit. We have a guest waiting in the wings talking about how to keep those resolutions. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and I was talking with my guests about how to eat right, to be more active, get fit and healthy. Now, what to do to make all those good habits a daily part of our lives. We asked Catherine Milkman to join us. She's an associate professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, secondary appointment at the Perelman School of Medicine. She's a contributor to the Washington Post, a behavioral economist. And Catherine Milkman, Katie Milkman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here with you.
So are you a fan of New Year's resolutions?
I am. I'm a fan of any goals that facilitate self-improvement, and New Year's resolutions are the biggest set of those.
Because we do them at the – we start out the year, 2018, saying, I am going to do X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a time when we feel like we have a clean slate and we – can ignore all the failings we've had in the past when we try to be better. So we have this renewed sense of optimism, and as a result, about 40% of Americans are making New Year's resolutions at this time of year.
Did you make one?
I did.
Did you?
I did make New Year's resolutions.
What is your New Year's resolution?
My New Year's resolution was to write timelier pieces when I contribute to the Washington Post instead of, you know, putting it off and not necessarily tying it to something that was interesting at the moment.
Oh, interesting. Well, we will see how you do this year, I guess, and you will see as well. One of the things that I read about in terms of just setting goals, if you're going to make a change or incorporate something that you want to do in your life, it's important to set goals. How should we think realistically about the goals in our lives?
It's a great question. One of the things people often do is they set abstract goals, like, I want to be healthier, or I want to be fitter, or I want to exercise more. And the more abstract the goal, the harder it is to achieve. It's really important to think about something concrete that you want to achieve and then break it down into the steps you can take to get there. So let me be specific.
Sure.
Instead of saying, I'd like to go to the gym more, you might set a goal of saying, I hope to go to the gym, or I aim to go to the gym 2 times a week. And then you might break that down and say, I'm going to go on Tuesdays and Thursdays after work, and I'm going to change my commute so that instead of, you know, getting off the trolley at this stop, I'm going to go two extra stops to this gym, and I'll go right after my last meeting on Tuesdays and Thursdays, put it in your calendar, and all of a sudden, you're making something that you can achieve and having a plan for getting there. So you're much more likely to actually get fit instead of just saying, I hope to get fitter this year.
Is it important to tell other people that this is your goal and these are the specifics?
Absolutely. There are lots of other things you can do besides just making a plan and making a concrete goal. And one of the big solutions that can be effective is making yourself accountable to people you care about so that they know, hey, I'm going to go to the gym on Tuesdays and Thursdays at this time. And people particularly whose impressions of you you're concerned about and who can validate whether or not you followed through in some way, that's going to make it harder for you to fall down on the job because you'll be a little bit ashamed.
Well, I was wondering about that, whether if you're a family member or a friend, is it important to shame someone if they didn't make good on their goal that week?
Well, you know, that's not a very nice way to live.
No, it isn't.
Right? By being the person that's shaming someone else. I think there's plenty of shame in just knowing somebody you care about is aware that you've fallen down on the job. So I don't think it's all the responsibility of friends and family everywhere to start shaming the people in their lives who told them about their goals. I think there's plenty of shame associated with just knowing somebody I care about found out I didn't follow through. We don't have to go the extra mile to make the shame more painful.
Is it important, though, let's say you set the goal, you're serious about it, it's something that you want to do, and you don't follow through on it. What do you need to ask yourself about why you might not be following through on this goal?
That's a great question. Well, you might ask, was the goal unrealistic? Did I set a goal that was feasible for me that I could literally achieve? And did I make a plan for how I would achieve it? Or was it just, you know, too far off? No one's going to actually realistically, well, I guess whatever, a couple people do it, but no one's going to go to the gym every day, for instance, or never eat chocolate or whatever it is. You know, so did you set a goal that was realistic for you? That might be one of the big reasons you failed. Did you actually find a way to make the goal work with your life? Was the plan that you set for yourself doable? Was it enjoyable? Did you make it fun for yourself in some way? I actually heard the previous guest talking about how important it is to make eating fun or make exercise fun, and that's a big takeaway from a lot of the research on behavioral sciences. A lot of the reason we don't do things is they're unpleasant to do, and so a huge aspect of figuring out how to get ourselves to achieve our goals is figuring out how to actually find ways to make that activity that we know we should engage in enjoyable. And so have you figured out the steps you need to take so that you look forward to doing whatever it is you need to do instead of dreading it? That's going to help a lot as well.
Is it a matter of reframing it, or is it the hunt for the thing that makes you feel good and you also enjoy?
I think it's really the hunt for the thing that feels good. So let me give you an example of some research done by a colleague of mine, the University of Chicago, Eilat Fischbach, has found that rather than telling people, for instance, at the gym, hey, try to do what's most effective, which might be our intuition when you're going to go to the gym, hey, I want to make the most out of these minutes at the gym, it's actually a better idea probably to tell people, find the most fun thing to do. So rather than say, you know, running a million miles an hour on the treadmill, maybe you should go to the Zumba class. Maybe you burn fewer calories on that individual visit, but you're actually probably going to visit more because you find yourself looking forward to it. Now the gym is fun instead of a drain on you. And so looking for what are the things we can do that are healthy but also fun is probably a much better strategy than simply thinking about what can I do that's effective? What can I eat that's healthy? So maybe broccoli and spinach are the best foods for you, but just eating those without butter and cheese is not going to work. So you need to find a way to make them delightful. And maybe that means finding the recipe that involves fried onions on top and cheese. At least you're eating your broccoli and your spinach. So what is it that makes the gym fun? And I've done some research on an idea I call temptation bundling.
Yeah, I read about that. In fact, you had a piece in the, I guess it was the Washington Post on New Year's Day about that.
Yeah, that's right. So this is one strategy that can make things fun, which is combining something that you don't look forward to so much with something you do. So at the gym, it's really simple. If there's some TV show or podcast or novel that you crave and enjoy and indulge in, say, you know, Game of Thrones or, you know, pick whatever it is for you. Only let yourself do that at the gym, and that can lead you to actually crave your workouts. Huh. And all of a sudden the workout time flies by because you're engaged with this indulgent entertainment at the same time. And also it has the added benefit of reducing any time you might be wasting outside of the gym enjoying that indulging entertainment. So you can use temptation bundling not only for workouts, but you can think of other ways that you can combine something that you crave with something you're not as excited about doing so that you'll start craving that thing and start doing it at the end of a long day. Like, for instance, what if you only let yourself listen to your favorite podcasts while you're doing household chores, or only let yourself indulge in your favorite Starbucks beverage while catching up on, you know, work emails, say, that you're dreading. So there are all different ways that you can combine things you enjoy with things you should be doing more of in order to get yourself motivated to do more of that thing.
And that is called temptation bundling, and that's Catherine Milkman. She's a behavioral economist, and we are talking about things that we can do to ensure that some of the healthy habits that we want to incorporate in our lives become a healthy habit. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read an email from Jay. I brush and floss around 7 p.m. Usually that keeps me from eating at night. It doesn't always work out. But talking about, I guess, combining things, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So combining things is a great way that we can basically kickstart good habits. So, for instance, yeah, if you already have a habit and you want to create a new one, piggybacking it right on top of that old one is a good way to make sure that you won't forget. You already have a cue. You already have a routine built. And so, for instance, you know, flossing after brushing your teeth or having an apple in the morning, if that's one of your goals after having coffee that's already on your agenda, these are ways that you can get that new habit inserted into your daily routine that can make it more effortless.
And just really what you're really just doing simply is combining one activity with another.
Exactly. It's very simple, this piggybacking idea, and that's sort of the elegance of it, how simple it is. But it isn't necessarily obvious when you think, I want to start doing something. You just say, oh, I'll just start doing it. I'll remember to start doing it. But linking it with something you're already doing is going to give you that reminder and that that solid routine to build on.
We talked about shame, which, of course, is a negative reinforcement. It might or may not work. What do you think about figuring out ways to reward ourselves for our good behavior?
Yeah, it's a great question. So temptation bundling, which we talked about, is one of the ways I think of rewarding yourself for good behavior, is basically just changing the good behavior to make it more fun. But you can literally think about an after-the-fact reward, right? So another strategy, the strategy of temptation bundling, is make the workout, say, fun by actually combining it with something enjoyable. But you could also say, do something nice for yourself after the workout. And that's another strategy for making it easier to motivate yourself to go to the gym at the end of a long day. Maybe you only let yourself have a special treat, like, thinking of examples like a smoothie from your favorite smoothie shop. I want to give you something that's a reward that's not unhealthy, right? You don't want to have, like, you know, oh, I can have a Cinnabon after I go to the gym, because now you're just undoing
it. I was going to say, just undid everything you just did.
Exactly, yeah. So the reward needs to not actually overcome whatever good thing you've achieved. But or taking a really long, indulgent hot shower at the gym afterwards. Think of ways that you can reward yourself for whatever good behavior it is that aren't counterproductive. And that's another way to make it easier to motivate yourself to achieve your goals.
Does money work?
Does money work? Yes. So it's hard to pay yourself. So that's one tricky thing. But there's some great research that shows if we pay people, for instance, to repeatedly engage in good behaviors for as short a time period as a month and intensively as like even 8 times a month, say paying someone to go to the gym 8 times a month, that can be enough to kickstart lasting behavior change that endures long after the payment period. My key takeaway from this for what can a person do is to recognize that making the effort to put in a burst of engagement, even for a short period of time, can have lasting benefits. It's not as clear that I can pay myself to do good behaviors, although there's a cool website called stickk.com. I've done some research with them in the past that allows people to put money on the line that they'll forfeit if they fail to achieve their goals. And there's lots of research evidence showing that putting money on the line for forfeiture as a very motivating way to get yourself to do good things. So that is a strategy that is available if you use these techniques. But often the takeaways from studies about how effective it is to pay people for doing things aren't, okay, I'll pay myself. Often the takeaway is, well, how can I motivate myself to engage in the behavior in the same way that these payments were motivating someone?
I do know people that have given up smoking and basically take the $10 a day that a pack of, or maybe it's even more than that these days, taking that money and putting it in a little piggy bank somewhere. And after a month, you've got real money there.
That's right. And you can reward yourself with a fabulous night out or a vacation by the end of the year. And so maybe that's motivating to some people. And that's great. There is research showing that money, upfront money payments, actually, by one of my colleagues at Penn, Kevin Volpe, he's shown that if you pay people to quit smoking, that can be really cost effective, even though you'd think that, you know, the cost saving someone incurs over the course of years would be enough incentive to get them to quit. Sometimes actually an upfront lump sum payment that's much smaller than what they'd save over the course of the year by quitting is more motivating. So figuring out how do we bring those rewards forward is a really important challenge in getting people to achieve their goals.
Let me read some comments. A listener says, I reward myself too much. I'll just kind of let that hang out there. An email from Jake says, I believe the mental component is the most important piece to making long-lasting healthy changes. Do you agree with that, Katie?
I do. I think, you know, that's the reason. So my field of behavioral economics, or behavioral science, as some people call it, I think has a lot to offer, because it really focuses on what are the economics and psychology that block us from achieving our goals. And I think that's the main thing. That's what blocks us. And so we've got to figure out what are the mental tricks and shortcuts. Temptation bundling is one. Yeah. Finding ways to make it fun is another. Thinking about making concrete plans is another. So these are all really cognitive strategies that have been proven extremely effective for helping us achieve our goals.
Here's an email from Dave. My sense is that our nation's health-related problems are a direct result of too easy access to too much cheap, lousy food. Do we live in a country just filled with temptation?
Well, that's certainly my experience of daily life, is that I'm constantly facing temptation. And so given that, it's even more important that we educate ourselves about what are the strategies we can use that are most effective for overcoming those temptations, because it is a constant struggle when you walk by. We talked about Cinnabon earlier. I'll bring it up again. That great smelling, incredibly unhealthy treat. How do you resist? And so, you know, try not to walk by it is one answer, and you know, set up structures that will facilitate achieving your goals and avoid temptation as much as possible.
We're almost out of time here, but I'm looking at the piece that you had in the Washington Post, The Science of Keeping Your New Year's Resolutions. You say start with a bang. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, that was referring to this research showing that getting people to intensively do something for as little as 4 weeks can have very long-term benefits. And so I think what that says is, if you have the motivation right now, it's the start of the year, don't sort of sneer at the fact that, you know the motivation will wane and New Year's resolutions are fad. Just grab it, use the motivation, go do whatever new thing it is a bunch of times in the next couple weeks while you're feeling motivated. And believe it or not, there will be enduring benefits. You'll stick to it more than you expect. Even if you don't stick to it as much as you hope, you'll still have a benefit. So that's what I mean by start with a bang.
Well, always like to end on a happy note. Catherine Milkman, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. She's an associate professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, a behavioral economist with a secondary appointment at the Perelman School of Medicine. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. You can download a podcast of the show. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. Listen to us on satellite radio and also sign up for our newsletter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of the show, produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.